From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in 1986 when 54% of new American moms tried breastfeeding. 34% breastfed their babies for 3 months or more back then. For many doctors, those numbers weren't nearly good enough, and for three decades they have worked to raise the rates. And the numbers show a significant change. The CDC says 75% of new mothers now are at least attempting to breastfeed in this country. 49% of babies are still being breastfed at least some of the time at 6 months old. That's up from 35% in 2000. And 27% are still being breastfed at least some of the time at 12 months old. That's up from 16% in 2000. But are women given the opportunity to both parent and work? We're seeing more efforts to create space in the workplace for breastfeeding or pumping. And who else but Donald Trump put this issue into the headlines 2 weeks ago when the New York Times reported the story of Miami-based lawyer Elizabeth Beck. Beck had been questioning Trump during a deposition in a real estate case, and she asked for a break. She said she needed to pump milk for her infant daughter. Trump called her disgusting. On Twitter, Trump didn't deny calling her disgusting, but he claimed that Beck wanted to pump the milk right in front of him. She says, of course, that's untrue. American medical leaders have been even more ambitious now for how many new moms they'd like to see trying breastfeeding, and they're going to spread the message in a concentrated effort this month long, all month long especially. So my guest for the hour is going to talk about these issues and more. We'll take some of your questions and comments as well. I'd like to welcome Dr. Ruth Lawrence. She's the author of Breastfeeding, a Guide for the Medical Profession, and she's a professor of pediatrics, obstetrics, and gynecology at the University of Rochester Medical Center, and really has devoted so much of her career to this issue. It's great to have you, Dr. Lawrence. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Later this hour, we're going to be hearing from Carrie Andrews, who is the Monroe County Legislature's Democratic leader. They have been working on the issue of breastfeeding, of breast pumping, and space in the workplace. We're going to get an update from Carrie Andrews on that. But Dr. Lawrence, let me start with your response. Again, I promise we won't talk Donald Trump all hour. But what did you make of it when you heard the story of him calling a woman disgusting when she asked for a break?
Well, I think you have to put it in the context of Donald Trump and everything else he said about different things. Probably deep-seated misunderstanding or lack of knowledge about the subject. And he tends to cover his ignorance with blasphemy sometimes.
Enough said about that. If you want to join the conversation about breastfeeding as we learn about new efforts, as we learn about the efforts that Dr. Lawrence has built her career on and more, you can call the program. It's 844-295-TALK, toll-free 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Some of you have already contacted the program via email or on Twitter, at Evan Dawson on Twitter, and we're going to be getting to some of your comments that have already been coming in online. And Dr. Lawrence, I've been finding out all morning long that this is a bit of an emotional issue for some people, and I guess I understand why. Some people have written already, some moms have written me to say how important breastfeeding is. Others have said they tried, were not able to breastfeed, they don't want to be shamed, that they feel emotional in that sense. Do you view it as been an emotional issue throughout your career?
Well, I'm aware of the emotions involved, and I'm aware of the feelings of those people who have succeeded and are very proud of that. But also, there is a small percentage of women who do not succeed. Part of that is our fault. We are not a breastfeeding culture. There's no support system. 75% breastfeed in the hospital. They go home, there's nothing there for them. So the women who have not succeeded need not heap blame upon themselves. Perhaps part of it's society, but probably medically speaking, there is a small percentage of women who cannot breastfeed.
Well, and you talk about supports being there in the hospital, but not at home. What needs to be there at home?
Well, you need another generation or support system. I mean, whether your sister, your mother, your grandmother, or somebody breastfed. But if everybody's saying, oh, honey, why are you bothering? I'll give a bottle. That's pretty hard to fight. What you need is somebody there saying, well, let me tell you how it should be. Let me help you position the baby. Let me do this or that to help you. And that system is not there in our culture.
Can we get there? Can we make changes to get there? Or do you think we should be getting there?
Well, I think we'll get there because the women who do succeed, and there's been this argument, well, the figures are good for well-educated women and socioeconomically successful women, and the women in the inner city are struggling because there's no peer support. Well, I started out in this business a long time ago. The only women who were breastfeeding were from the inner city, were African-American mothers. They taught me about breastfeeding, and they had large families and breastfed all their babies. So it's not that certain cultures can't breastfeed or won't breastfeed. We just have a social problem that we need to straighten out.
A number of the people who contacted me, I think at least two or three this morning, sent me an article that appeared on NPR just yesterday. And the title of the article is, I'm an Obstetrician and I Failed at Breastfeeding. And if I could, I'd like to just read a section of that.
Certainly.
Because I think for some of our listeners who wanted me to see this article, they felt like that this encapsulates some of the emotions that they went through. This is from Dr. Malia Sela. She's an obstetrician gynecologist at DuPage Health Specialists in Lyle, Illinois. And here's what she wrote. Quote, as an obstetrician, I've counseled countless patients on the benefits of breastfeeding to both mother and baby. My struggle with breastfeeding began immediately as a parent. My daughter wasn't able to get a successful latch, but I knew she would soon figure it out. I put her to my breast every 2 hours until she would give up and fall asleep. When we went home 2 days after Sophia's birth, she was still not nursing well, requiring me to pump breast milk and supplement with formula early on. I was a fourth-year medical student, and I had 1 month to study for the second of three exams required to obtain my medical license, so I decided to pump exclusively and feed my pumped milk from a bottle. I pumped every hour to help increase my supply, storing the milk pumped on the odd hours and feeding the milk pumped on the even hours. By the time I took my exam, I was exhausted and frustrated. I decided to stop pumping and exclusively feed formula. While I felt relieved to live a more normal life, I continued to mourn the fact that I never experienced what it felt like to breastfeed my child. As an obstetrician, I'd recommend exclusive breastfeeding to all my patients. Yet here I was, a complete failure. Not only did I feel like a bad mother, I also felt like a bad doctor. I could not even follow my own recommendation. My pediatrician told me she would fully support me if I wanted to continue to breastfeed my second child. But finally, she said, I also want you to know that if you want to stop breastfeeding, it's okay. One thing that I had heard for my entire pregnancy and my entire training as an OB, for that matter, was how important breastfeeding was. I almost felt like I had been brainwashed into thinking breastfeeding was absolutely the only healthful way to feed my child. This was the first time I'd ever heard it would be okay not to breastfeed. And I recently saw a patient of my own who was having trouble breastfeeding. I shared my own struggles and advised strategies that might help. And finally, I told her, if you decide to stop breastfeeding, let me give you permission to do so. You are no less a mother, and your child will be just fine. That's Dr. Malia Sela, DuPage Health Specialist in Lyle, Illinois. What do you make of that?
Well, I think it's not an uncommon story. And to pump and then feed, that's twice as much work. That must have been awful. And being a fourth-year medical student is not easy.
Yes,
been
I
there,
imagine.
Done that.
Yeah.
And so her story is very true. And maybe what she still needs now is some helpful supportive education on really how to fix that baby's latch. There's nothing like putting a bottle in a baby's mouth to totally confuse the baby in the first few days of life. So she was a setup, and I feel very badly for her. I understand her conflict, and I worry about other mothers who were forced into a similar situation.
Now, before I get to our first phone calls, and I see the phone ringing, if you want to join the conversation, it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. With Dr. Ruth Lawrence, the author of Breastfeeding, A Guide for the Medical Profession, and a professor of pediatrics, obstetrics, and gynecology at the University of Rochester Medical Center. We'd love to hear from you on this. I just want to focus on one of the words. I thought the piece I just read, you know, this is an OB who said she went through the emotional turmoil of not being able to do what she was telling her patients, and now she still tells her patients, absolutely, breastfeed if you can. Here are the support groups. I thought the word There was a word that was strong in there, and I want to get your take. I want to read that again. She says, I almost felt like I had been brainwashed into thinking breastfeeding was absolutely the only healthful way to feed my child, and it was the first time I'd ever heard it was okay not to breastfeed. That's a strong word, I think, brainwashed, but I think what she's saying is there's a lot of pressure that this is so far and away the best. So let me ask you as a doctor, what changes have you seen in your career to the quality of formula now versus decades ago?
Well, a formula is cow's milk to start with. So you take a foreign protein and it poses certain problems. And formulas are fine. They're adequate. The baby will be nourished. What the baby misses are many other things. And it's not a contest between cow milk and mother's milk. And what happened, actually, in our culture was that women got brainwashed, if I can use the term, to use formula. You know, oh, honey, don't bother. It's all there in the can. And so we've lost the knowledge and the experience and the support, and we're trying to bring that back. And when mothers fail, it's the system's failure, not the mother's.
In just a second, we will talk about exactly what the differences are in terms of what the medical system will tell you about the benefits are of breastfeeding. I want to get our first phone call in, and this is Rebecca in Rochester. Go ahead, Rebecca. Rebecca, are you there?
Yes, I am. I'm sorry about that.
That's okay. Go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call, doctor. I was diagnosed as bipolar around 2 months after my premature daughter's birth. She was born at 25 weeks. At the time, I was put on Zoloft when she was about 32 weeks. There was conflicting information about whether or not it was safe for me to breastfeed. I had pumped a lot since she was obviously too little to latch on, but I felt I needed to quit because I didn't want the medications to negatively affect her. After all these years, I'm on a steady regimen of medicines that keep me steady. However, I'm afraid that if I were to plan to get pregnant or have another baby, that I would have to discontinue those medications that wouldn't be good for me either, in terms of my baby's health, and of course that extends to breastfeeding. So in terms of breastfeeding and mental health issues, what are your comments on that, please?
Well, you apparently got some misinformation. We do have a lactation study center that can give information about all medications. It does happen that Zoloft is probably one of the safest of the psychiatric drugs available because it does not get into the breast milk. So if you find yourself in the same situation and have another baby and are taking Zoloft, you could certainly breastfeed that baby.
Okay. In terms of Lamictal and Wellbutrin, do those have negative effects? From the little I know in the first few weeks of pregnancy, it can cause birth defects. So I'm wondering, in the future, do I need to discontinue those before I get pregnant?
Well, I would call the mother-to-baby line, which is the teratology line, and get the latest word on those drugs. In terms of breastfeeding, Wellbutrin does get into the milk. What we do advise, depending on the dose the mother is on, and we do advise that she dose after she feeds and make other adjustments in her dosing and feeding schedule so the least amount gets to the baby.
Okay, thank you very much. And you know, my daughter is 8 and a half now, so you bring up a good point that things may have changed in terms of contraindications and stuff. I really appreciate your help, doctor.
Well, you're very welcome.
Rebecca, thanks for the phone call. And if you want to join the program and call with comments or questions, it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. On Twitter, Joanna says, I'm an itinerant speech therapist. I've pumped in my car on Lyle and Avenue D. The biggest issue for me, keeping the milk cold, Dr. Lawrence.
Well, that's a very interesting question because we know the properties of human milk are such that you can keep freshly pumped milk at room temperature for 8 to 10 hours. and it'll be perfectly safe because there's so many anti-infection properties in human milk. It's remarkable. If you open a can of formula, you got to use it or throw it out within the hour.
Okay, so 8 to 10 hours.
Yes.
Pumped milk at room temperature is fine.
At room temperature, yeah.
Okay, very interesting. At Evan Dawson on Twitter, we're going to be getting more of your calls and comments. I want to take a look at where we are in terms of breastfeeding numbers and where, for example, the Surgeon General's office would like to see us go. And I'm sure Dr. Lawrence will tell me if I've got these numbers right or wrong here. But here's here's what this is the Surgeon General's goal for Healthy People 2020. Currently, about 76.5% of babies are breastfed in this country at birth. Surgeon General wants that up to 82%. 49% are breastfed at 6 months. Surgeon General would like to see that over 60%. 27% are breastfed at 12 months. Surgeon General wants that at 34%. And 16% were exclusively, hold on a second here. Let me go back. 37% exclusively breastfed at 3 months. And the Surgeon General wants that at 42%, 16% exclusively breastfed at 6 months. They'd like to see it at 25%. So those are the numbers that I'm seeing. That's where we are and where the Surgeon General wants to get us to by 2020. Those are the numbers that you're familiar with? Is that
about
right?
Oh, yes. Why they carried it out to the decimal point, I don't know.
They do. They've actually got decimal. I was rounding. But they do have they have very specific decimal points. But I, either way, I guess what I would like for you to address is, you know, we're not that far off on some of those numbers. And compared to where we were in the mid-1980s, what do you make of the change, where we are now versus then?
We're making progress. We're making progress. Women are interested. Women are learning about it. And my particular focus has been educating doctors, and I think doctors are getting educated, and they're not interfering as much as they used to.
Interfering in what way?
Well, when a mother comes to her doctor and says, you know, the baby's feeding all the time or something like that, instead of helping the mother, the doctor says, well, why don't you use formula? That'll stick to his ribs, and he'll sleep all night. And so they don't get the proper answer for their breastfeeding problems.
So in other words, we're not seeing nearly as many doctors with those kind of remarks as for their patients.
Well, we're working on it.
Let me get Bobby in Rochester. Go ahead, Bobby.
Hello. I just wanted to say that I'm in my 70s. My children are in their 40s. I breastfed them as long as I could. I went over 6 months, almost a year. And I have to say that I don't know when either of them have ever not been healthy. I mean, they go to the doctor regularly for checkups, but I honestly don't know that they've ever been sick. So I just wanted to say that. I attribute it to the breastfeeding in some ways.
Bobby, thanks for the phone call. And when it comes to the benefits, what we've always been told is that nutritionally, breast milk is better than formula for a number of reasons, especially when it comes to immunity sort of in the early years. But Dr. Lawrence, how do you categorize the benefits?
Well, actually, there's some benefits that go on for many years, and I think this caller has described them. If they have, she has 40-year-old children who remain healthy, because the incidence of the onset of diabetes, for instance, is reduced in children who are breastfed. The incidence of allergy and many of the sort of chronic irritations that we notice in life are reduced. A study in the early 1900s that followed men till they were 70 years old showed there were less heart attacks and strokes and so forth in babies who had been breastfed in the 1920s. So this is not new, but it's been reconfirmed.
Okay. A couple comments that have come in online. Kara says, formula is much better than ever. It's not breast milk, but it's also not like giving your child 2% milk. And Kathleen says on Twitter, I just started listening, and I sure hope the guest isn't telling everyone that dairy milk is nutritionally equivalent to formula. Do you want to respond to that?
Well, I haven't mentioned dairy milk, but
I think she heard cow's milk is the term.
Right. And, of course, formula is very carefully engineered. and many of the problems in cow milk have been removed, and nutrients have been added, and a good deal of science and effort has gone into this. And so the present-day formula is far better than fresh milk, whether it's 2% or homogenized or out of the evaporated milk can and that sort of thing. That is well confirmed.
And I know that about a year ago, maybe about a year and a half ago now, you saw the headlines out of Ohio State University. Cynthia Colin is a professor of sociology, and she conducted research that tried to, in her words, avoid selection bias when it comes to breastfeeding and outcomes. And the headline from their study was, breastfeeding benefits appear to be overstated, according to a study of siblings. What they tried to do was look at two siblings within the same family. I think I just, that's probably a redundant statement. Two siblings, one who was breastfed, one who was formula fed, and try to get a handle on whether there was a difference in outcomes. And so here's what they said. They said, a new study comparing siblings who were fed differently during infancy suggests breastfeeding might be no more beneficial than bottle feeding for 10 or 11 long-term health and well-being outcomes in children's ages 4 to 14. And Cynthia Colin says the reason she thinks is because, in her words, quote, many previous studies suffer from selection bias. They either do not or cannot statistically control for factors such as race, age, family income, mother's employment, things we know that can affect both breastfeeding and other health outcomes. In other words, she's saying, if you are the type of parent who is breastfeeding, you're probably the type of parent who is pretty well attuned to your child's nutrition, health issues, so you're going to make sure the child is well cared for, safe, good nutrition otherwise when they start eating regular food, and that if you control for these things, that their concern was that breastfeeding was over, sort of overhyped. What did you make of what you saw there?
Well, I think all those points are valid. However, the problem with that study was they took babies who were, quote, ever breastfed. So if they went to the breast once or twice in the hospital, they were in the breastfeeding group.
Oh, even if they were just one or two attempts, yeah. And that was
it? Oh, yes. Yes. That study has been greatly maligned in the scientific literature because of this. Ever breastfed is not a good definition. They made no effort to figure out if they were breastfed for a day, a week, a month, a year, or whatever. And it's bad science.
Bad science. Okay. One of her conclusions that she points to is that breastfeeding is valuable. She says, I'm not saying breastfeeding is not valuable, not beneficial, especially for boosting nutrition and immunity in newborns. But if we really want to improve maternal and child health in this country, let's also focus on things that can really do that in the long term, like subsidized daycare, better maternity leave policies, more employment opportunities for low-income mothers that pay a living wage. That's where she wants the focus, less on breastfeeding, more on those things. I suspect Dr. Lawrence is going to tell us, well, we can walk and chew gum at the same time. What do you think?
Well, that's true. I don't chew gum. But important point about this, all of those things cost money. Breastfeeding does not cost money. And Melissa Bartek, a very elegant scientist at Harvard, has shown that if 90% of babies were breastfed for the first 6 months of life, we would save $14 billion in health care costs in the United States. And it would save $10 billion in maternal health care as well. So we're talking big bucks. And the argument falls apart.
We're talking to Dr. Ruth Lawrence, who is, among other things, the author of Breastfeeding, A Guide for the Medical Profession, and a professor of pediatrics, obstetrics, and gynecology at the University of Rochester Medical Center. And breastfed, did I hear it? 9 children?
Yes.
Breastfed all 9 children. That is remarkable. Sort of a personal and professional testament to breastfeeding. Let's get a short break, come back, and we're going to talk to Carrie Andrews, who is Monroe County Legislature's Democratic leader. We're going to talk about not only breastfeeding, but also pumping and resources for mothers in the workplace and what we've seen on the county level. That conversation continues next on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, what is a pop-up restaurant? Why would a restaurant open and then intentionally close 6 weeks later? We're seeing a number of these businesses around the Rochester Finger Lakes region. We'll meet some of the people involved in so-called pop-ups or supper clubs. The new trend examined next hour on Connections.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from Lucas Greenhouses in Fairport, serving the Rochester region for more than 30 years. The nursery offers locally grown plants, from annuals and perennials to vegetables and herbs. Lucas Greenhouses, grown right here. LucasGH.com.
Welcome back to Connections, and Valerie writes to the program, in 1975, when my mother heard I was breastfeeding, she sent a bottle sterilizer as a gift. That same year, three women were arrested in Florida for breastfeeding on a park bench. I am so glad the struggle is lessening. Good show today. That's from Valerie. But I also heard from Ben, and Ben says, I fully support women breastfeeding their children and think it's a good thing to promote, but why... What does that have to do with Donald Trump's supposed comments? Why do you have to trash him all the time? You started the discussion with the idea that Trump's comments prompted all of this. No, I want to clarify. The reason I included as part of the opening remarks Donald Trump's comments that the New York Times reported from 2 weeks ago, and if you're just joining us, the comments were that he was in a deposition on a real estate hearing, and the female attorney who was questioning him asked for a break so she could go pump breast milk for her infant daughter. Donald Trump called her disgusting. And he has said on Twitter, I did call her disgusting, but he thought she was going to try to breast pump right in front of him. And she says, no, of course, that's not true. I bring that up because, Dr. Lawrence, I suspect, assuming that story about Donald Trump is true, and I will cede to Ben's wishes and say, I wasn't in that room. Maybe we've got it all wrong. And that he was actually being quite patient and generous with the woman that he called disgusting. But I thought that was somewhat representative of there's still a culture that doesn't want women to breastfeed in public, less so now than in 1975 when women were getting arrested on park benches. But there's still a culture that says, you know, do you have to go back to work? Do you have to pump breast milk at the office? And I wonder if you think that that is changing, especially in the workplace.
Well, I think it is changing in the workplace because workplace efforts have been rather extensive. And we have a whole program of people who go to employers and explain them. There's a kit, if you will. There's a kit for everything these days, but there's a kit for employers to try and assist their employees to pump and that sort of thing. Nobody wants to display breastfeeding. And a mother who breastfeeds in public, you actually, if you notice, don't notice, because the breast doesn't show. The baby shows. The breast doesn't show. You see more breast walking down the street in Rochester these days.
Dr. Ruth Lawrence is our guest. Carrie Andrews is on the line with us. She is Monroe County Democratic Leader of the Legislature. Carrie, thank you for taking the time to join the program. How are you?
I'm well, Evan. Thanks for having me. It's nice to be with you and Dr. Lawrence.
Do you want to give Donald Trump the benefit of the doubt about those comments that were...
Oh, no. No, I don't think so. there are not many things I want to give him the benefit of the doubt for.
Well, but again, there was some complaint from listeners that I was being unfair, and I just thought in the workplace setting, there is still a bit of a struggle for new mothers. Carrie, what have you been working on the county level, and what have we been seeing when it comes to availability, whether it's just space in an office building and this issue?
Sure. Well, in the county legislature, it was actually a little bit over a year ago now, I introduced a proposal that would require that the county designate a room in each of the buildings that it owns or leases, where there are employees or where the building is open to the public. Designate a specified room that would be available for breastfeeding and for lactation purposes when women return to work after having children, and for members of the public who happen to be, whether it's in the clerk's office or in a Department of Human Services building, when members of the public come in, we wanted to have a space available for them to breastfeed in case they needed to do so. And that proposal went in last June.
And remind our listeners the reception your proposal has gotten.
Well, I can't say that it's dead. The proposal went to a committee. It was debated last June. And actually, it had the full support of the Democratic caucus. And at that point, there were five Republican women who also sent a letter indicating their support for the proposal. It was tabled at that point in time so that the county could do a little investigation and figure out what buildings it could be feasible to have those rooms established and what if there were any costs associated with such a proposal. They came back to us with a little bit of information, and then the proposal again came up for a committee conversation, I think it was in February of this year, and was again tabled after a brief conversation. And so that's where it stands right now, is it's tabled. I haven't given up on it because we certainly have a majority of votes to get it passed right now. It's just a matter of getting it to the floor and having everyone vote yes.
I guess I just don't fully understand the opposition. And I don't say this as someone who is, again, for our listeners who were feeling... some listeners wrote in and said they had felt shamed about using formula. And I don't want people to feel that way, and certainly not as a host. I would never want anyone to feel that way. So I'm not, you know, sort of militant on any part of this issue, but I still don't fully understand the opposition to your proposal, Carrie. Do you?
No, I honestly, I don't fully understand it either. I think some of it could just be political or, you know, historically there's been a pretty clear partisan divide in the Monroe County Legislature. I think some of that is just getting in the way of getting this done. There were some, you know, what buildings does it make sense to have this sort of room available in? Like if it's a building where there aren't members of the public that come in or we don't have any county employees, then clearly, you know, the intent of the proposal wasn't to force the county to have a room established in a building like that. But I am hopeful that this will get done this year. I have had conversations with the majority about it, and I'm hopeful that we will get it done.
Let me ask Carrie and Dr. Lawrence this question. Carrie, I'll start with you. Are you concerned that if there is resistance to simply having available space in the workspace for women who want to return to work after childbearing and either breastfeed or pump breast milk, if there's resistance to this, does that potentially diminish the career aspirations for women? Do they not come back to work? Does that sort of potentially inhibit their career growth while they're trying to also have a family?
Well, my understanding is, and to be clear, I mean, I'm not a mother, so I haven't gone through this myself, but from what I've read and talk in conversations with people who support this measure and talk a lot about how to facilitate breastfeeding, that returning to work is one of those obstacles that women face after having children. And so making rooms available and space available and making the conditions as good as possible to continue breastfeeding and pumping upon returning to work will increase the likelihood that women will continue to do so. And so I think that Monroe County here, we have a real opportunity to promote breastfeeding as a public health issue and to facilitate it for as many women who want to hopefully continue, you know, to increase the rates of breastfeeding and all the positive health effects that we get as a result of it.
Dr. Lawrence, what do you think about women who want to continue their careers and feel that there might be a barrier because when they go back to work, it's not defined, they don't know if they can breastfeed or pump, and they're feeling some kind of tension there?
Well, as a matter of fact, in the state of New York, there are laws that require their employee and the employer to provide such resources, and they're pretty well spelled out. And so if an employer is not providing them, the employee can report them, and the rest will take care of itself. So I would think that while the legislature is not an employee, maybe they'd get off the hook, but there's plenty in terms of the average woman going back to work to the ordinary job. She's protected by the law.
How have you seen the culture for women going back to work as mothers change from when your career began to now?
Oh, tremendously. There were no resources. There were no pumps. You made do on your own. And now all of these resources are available. Your health care program provides a pump. And so there are many things in the system now that facilitate a mother going back to work and pumping her milk.
Carrie, before I let you go, just remind our listeners then what happens next with this. If it's tabled and you can't get support of this, it might end up dead. Is that right? What happens next?
Yeah, if we can't get support by the end of the year, then it will die because we'll start a new legislative cycle next year, or at least the legislators who will be there will start a new cycle next year, so it would have to be reintroduced. I'm not going to let go of this, though. I feel strongly that this is a good law and a good proposal and that there is majority support for it, so it's really just a matter of getting it to the floor to get a vote on it. But to clarify a couple of things also about the intent of this, New York State does, as Dr. Lawrence mentioned, we do have great laws that allow women to request space, and one of the things that we wanted to do is kind of take that burden off the woman returning to work and put it more on the employer of providing that space so that when returning to work, the mother doesn't have to go through and figure out what exactly is the policy, what exactly are her rights. And so we wanted to streamline that process and make it as easy as possible because, like in the county, for example, when we were trying to figure out what is their breastfeeding policy, going through the many county policies and the handbook and everything online, we didn't find anything. And so the goal here really is to educate and to promote and to facilitate that process as much as possible.
Well, the legislature should be a leader, not a follower.
Exactly. We've chosen to be on certain issues, and I think that we should on this issue as well because it's vitally important to the health of our community.
And in other words, Carrie, it's there's a difference between a woman going back to work and having to ask and an employer saying, okay, now that you asked, I guess we can figure out where you can go. There's a difference between that and the employer saying, welcome back. If you need the space, this is what's already designated. You know, be comfortable, and it's you know, different in sort of mentality and approach there?
Sure. It sends a very different message. I mean, if before I even go out on maternity leave, I'm aware of this room and I've been, you know, working in this place for a while and I see it and I see other women use it, then I realize that that's going to be available for me when I return to, and it kind of takes some of the mystery and the uncertainty out of it. So it sends a very different message, I think.
Carrie Andrews, the Democratic leader of the Monroe County Legislature. Nice to have you. Thank you for taking the time, Carrie.
Thank you so much. Thanks for talking about this issue.
All right. If you want to join the program with any more calls or comments and questions, it is 844-295-TALK, toll-free 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. My guest for the hour is Dr. Ruth Lawrence, the author of Breastfeeding, A Guide for the Medical Profession, and a professor of pediatrics, obstetrics, and gynecology at the University of Rochester Medical Center. Gary is next. Go ahead, Gary.
Hi, Evan. Thanks for having this show.
Sure.
And but you made a comment, and I just wanted to clarify something. And I think you know I've worked on this issue. And just two things real quick that when the doctor mentions about the legislature not being an employer, but to keep in mind, but in fact they are. When you go to the county office building, you go to the county clerk's office, you go to some of those offices, you find that the majority of the employees are women. So the county legislature is acting as an employer. But more importantly, what kind of my interest as I listen to the show is the comment you made that some people were talking about being, they felt that this was shaming women into using formula. And as a breastfeeding rights advocate, I just wanted to make sure it was clear to people that we feel that breastfeeding, of course, is in many cases more beneficial for many, many reasons, not only the health of the child, but in regards to county government and as an employer, it's actually economically benefit. But that at all times that we recognize that there are cases where some women for any number of reasons cannot breastfeed, and it should never be placed as, or it should never be seen as a situation where anyone is being shamed because they're not doing this. And I just wanted to make sure, you know, that was clear. Thanks, Evan.
Thank you, Gary. I appreciate the phone call. Thoughts, Dr. Lawrence?
Well, I would certainly agree. We never instill any guilt purposely or by design, and we try to avoid that at all costs and be as supportive as we possibly can.
Eric writes to the program and says, a while ago, Time magazine featured a cover of a 5-year-old breastfeeding. I thought it was a 4-year-old. I think it was a few years ago, but I think we're thinking of the same one. And Eric says, when I saw that, I said to myself, if not to my wife, that it looked odd for a child so much older than an infant to be breastfeeding. Nonetheless, when our daughter was born in 2012, my wife began breastfeeding her, and 2.5 years later, she has not stopped breastfeeding our daughter regularly throughout the day. Can the panel discuss the benefits and drawbacks to breastfeeding children past 1 or past 2 years of age?
Well, it's well known. In other cultures, the average age of weaning is 4.2 years around the world. So United States is very different.
What's the average age of weaning?
4.2 years. If you read all the anthropologist reports and that sort of thing, so to be an average, there's got to be some that are well beyond 4.2 years. So physiologically and biologically, it's perfectly reasonable to breastfeed that long. What happens in the United States, there are, if you will, social pressures. And so we're never sure where those social pressures come from. As more and more women breastfeed, fewer and fewer women are buying formula. And therefore, the formula companies are fighting hard.
But when it comes, I hesitate to use the word should, but when it comes to what you'd like to see new mothers do, how long is, right or wrong, these are wrong terms. How long is ideal for
Well, that's a good term. And it's been looked at among all species. There are 4,000 mammalian species, and they breastfeed for different lengths of time. There's a formula, for instance, if you look at the length of gestation of a species, like the whale has a pregnancy for 2 years. Well, they're supposed to breastfeed for four times that. So the various anthropologists have projected what would be ideal, but the truth is, in this country, in our culture, in 2015, what's ideal is what works for this mother and baby.
Okay. Well, I hope that answers the question, Eric. And let me grab Mary in Spencerport, who's next up. Go ahead, Mary.
Yes. My mother breastfed, and 51 years ago, I was the only one in the hospital that was breastfeeding. My daughter's breastfeed. I breastfed four of my six children, one because I didn't because of family situation. But my youngest was born when I was 42 years old, and my milk never came in. She lost almost 2 pounds. And I found I have a family history of hypothyroidism, and I was diagnosed with that after her birth. And I found that that was an early symptom. Not being able to nurse was an early symptom of hypothyroidism. And I wondered if the doctor would comment on that. And I also wanted to say that my bottle-fed babies, I made a point of holding them. I figured if they were young enough to have a bottle, they were young enough to be held and not propped. So if she could comment.
Yeah, Mary, thank you very much. Go ahead, Dr. Lawrence.
Well, you're entirely right. A failure to produce milk is an early sign of hypothyroidism. And in fact, the same thing may happen if you have hyperthyroidism. The thyroid is very involved, as are all the organs of the body in terms of producing milk and that sort of thing. So you're very correct on that. And some things we can't control. And the good news is that there is very good formula that can be used in such situations.
We're talking about breastfeeding in 2015, and Nicole in Rochester is a nursing mom who wants to talk about the resources at Highland. Is that right, Nicole?
Yeah, I did.
Go ahead.
Your show today has just been making me think about what helped me be successful with nursing. And I think part of it was having the mindset that I wanted to be successful going into it. But also at Highland, the nurses were extremely helpful those first couple days with positioning and everything. And they had lactation consultants that came in to check in and see how things were going. And once I went home, there was also a phone number that you can call and ask questions if you needed to know anything. So I think without that, I'm not sure I would have been successful, but I'm really thankful for the nurses and the lactation consultants over there.
I'm extremely biased, Nicole. My son was born at Highland, and it was a phenomenal experience. And
we loved Highland.
It was just, you know, so I have nothing to compare it to. He's the only child I have. It was really phenomenal there. And what I found with the nursing staff there was, because I, you know, you get to know the people on your floor, and you're there for a day or two, and the nurses wanted to give all the information. And then I saw them give moms the choice or parents the choice, and I didn't see any shaming at all. I saw some moms choosing formula, and there was, do you have all the information? Are you comfortable with your choice? Yes? Okay. And it was certainly an emphasis on trying to provide the resources if you wanted to breastfeed and all the information, but there was no shame. I thought it was a phenomenal place to be. And so, yes, for listeners who always wonder about the host bias, definitely I'm very much biased about that experience. What do you think, Dr. Lawrence?
Well, I could hardly argue. I was chief of pediatrics at Highland for 30 years.
You've left a wonderful legacy. You have. You really have. Nicole, thanks for the call. And she is saying that, you know, she was determined to make it work.
Yeah.
And I think that was an interesting way to describe it because, you know, for some moms, it is, I'm sure, easier than for others.
Yeah.
And for some, it can be a struggle. What's your message for the moms who have to have, like Nicole, a little determination because it is difficult, either with latching or I've seen parents end up back in the hospital a week later because the child is they're worried about malnutrition, not taking a breast, et cetera.
Well, ask for help. Ask for help. It's often there, but it may be in the background till you ask. The other thing is that what often makes it hard, and our previous caller talking about her children and her later life being a problem, stress is one of the biggest enemies of successful breastfeeding, and I might also say fatigue. If mothers don't get enough rest, and somebody has to facilitate that rest, that's what dads are for, is non-nutritive cuddling. And so the mother can rest, and dad can rock the baby.
I'm a big fan of cuddling.
Good.
with my boy, that was, I agree. And, you know, sometimes dads will, I've heard dads say that they feel a little detached from the process. But it's interesting to hear you say that.
Well, I feel very strongly about it. Both parents have equal responsibility. One is nutritive and one is non-nutritive, and that's why I call the dad the non-nutritive cuddler.
Got a few minutes left with Dr. Ruth Lawrence, and SB on Twitter says, can you ask about the health benefits that the mother experiences from breastfeeding?
Well, actually, the data are collecting, and early on, a woman who breastfeeds recovers from her pregnancy much more physiologically. The uterus contracts, she loses less blood, all of those things. So you may be dog tired, but you're recovering much more rapidly. And then in the long range health, mothers who breastfeed have a lower incidence of long-term obesity. There's nothing like a pregnancy to get you on the obesity track, believe me, but breastfeeding helps there. Long-term diabetes, other long-term diseases of that nature, mothers who breastfeed have less problem, and they have less osteoporosis. You'd think the reverse would be true, but when you breastfeed, you absorb calcium, you absorb vitamin D, and physiologically your bones are preserved.
One of the reasons we wanted Dr. Ruth Lawrence on the program today is to talk about a number of the trends and the latest statistics. And this month, all month long, we are seeing this effort, a coordinated effort to increase awareness of breastfeeding. So some final thoughts that you want to leave for our audience as we look at this issue sort of comprehensively and we look forward with breastfeeding. What would you say?
Well, I think it's good to get it out in the open and talk about it. And if somebody feels embarrassed or humiliated or anything like that, let's talk about it. Motherhood is a big job. It's a lifetime job. Breastfeeding is part of it, but it's not the only thing.
What's the biggest change you've seen in your career on this?
Well, I think we've turned it around, and mothers are giving it a thought. and many more mothers, when told about it and educated about it and supported in doing it, are succeeding.
Thanks for taking the time to be here today. It's been, I appreciate not only your time, but you're answering a lot of our listeners' phone calls and questions and comments. I shouldn't have been surprised that there'd be so much interest, should I have been? You've heard it your entire career, haven't you?
Yes.
Well, that's Dr. Ruth Lawrence. Lawrence, she is the author of Breastfeeding, A Guide for the Medical Profession. That goes back to 1980, is that right?
First edition.
First edition, 1980.
Yeah. But that doesn't... Eighth edition coming out in October.
You see, the work hasn't stopped. First edition, 1980. Eighth edition, 2015. She's also a professor of pediatrics, obstetrics, and gynecology at University of Rochester Medical Center. Thank you, Dr. Lawrence.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure to be here.
All right. We're going to get a short break here and come back with a very different conversation next hour. And I just want to let you know that you can get a podcast of all of our programs here, every hour of Connections, at wxxinews.org/connections, podcasts of all of the programs there. A listener recently said, and this was my favorite comment, that the Connections podcasts are their version of summer beach reading. It's the best compliment we could get. So go grab your summer beach reading and come back in just a second for our second hour.